Welcome to the Mozilla Digital Memory Bank Podcast, a production of the Center for History and New Media.
I'm Ken Albers, and this week we will hear excerpts from an oral history interview with the president of Mozilla Europe, Tristan Nitot, recorded in March of 2006 by Tom Scheinfeld and Olivia Ryan. Tristan described the unique circumstances that allowed for the creation of Mozilla Europe and gave us a history of the organization's early days.
The situation has its roots in the history of the project. In summer 2003, when everybody from Netscape was let go, Peter van der Becken, which is the person who helped me start Mozilla Europe, and myself, we had some spare time for legal reasons. We were, well, in France at least, you can't fire someone just like that. Take your stuff and we won't see you this afternoon. It doesn't work like that. So they have to give you several months' notice, and after that, you have the vacations you didn't take and various things that end up. In my case, it was 8 months where I didn't have, where I was paid to do nothing, basically. And I wanted to, well, I could have found work, you know, a job, and put that money into my pocket. And it was certainly an option, but I didn't feel it was really an option, or not a good option, at least. The Mozilla project was really into trouble by then, and we thought we really wanted the project to survive and, you know, and be well. And the state was too big. You know, it's really the choice of people. You know, it was the future of the web. We could not let it go like that and take the money and do something else. Anyway, we were not interested. So I did have a few job interviews, and people finally, the interviewers ended in understanding that really my heart was Mozilla. And so Peter and myself started Mozilla Europe, and we didn't know where we were going. Actually, we just wanted, you know, to carry this thing and let's see where it goes. We knew that we at some point we would need some money, you know, behind these 8 months. We were not really concerned by that because we knew after 8 months we would have, I'd say that, there's a program for unemployed people where you, at least you don't have to sell your house and all that. But we didn't want to abuse the system, and so we knew that we could do anything we wanted during 8 months, but after that, we really had to look for a job. And it took, well, we started looking for jobs, but it doesn't necessarily take you, you know, 50 hours a week to search for a job. Usually you have spare time, and we worked hard, so it actually leaves you with more than that. And I don't remember what your question was.
No. I was asking you about how the organizational structure of Mozilla Europe emerged and relates to the U.S.
So, yeah, getting back to your question is, we wanted to work on a project. We thought that it was important to have the Mozilla project not be too U.S.-centric. It's every project I've been involved with tends, when it's done in the U.S., it tends to be U.S.-centric, I mean, for obvious reasons, right? And there are major differences between U.S. and Europe. There are subtle cultural differences, and Europe is actually just a concept. You know, it does not really exist, frankly. It really sucks at this point, by the way. It's just, I mean, you know, people see Europe as a country, and it's definitely not a country, right? Like, Texas is very different from California, and it's different from, I don't know, New York. You see, you know, it's really a different culture. In Europe, it's even worse, and most of all, you have language barriers. I speak English, I speak French, I can read Spanish, I don't speak a word of German, and, you know, there are Dutch, Italian, I cover maybe 15% of the European population with the languages I speak. So it's totally different, and it's hard to get that when you're you get that when you're in Europe, but where in the U.S., where to be successful you ship the product in English and then you're done. For Europe, it's totally different story. When you cover four languages, you're just at the beginning of it.
Is language, do you think, the biggest reason why there needs to be a Mozilla Europe?
Well, it's one of the top reasons. One of the other reasons is that we have developers in Europe, and they were orphans at the time because Mozilla Foundation, which was just created, had very little money to spend. And so what they did is hire a few key people, and they hired them in the Valley for, you know, efficiency reasons. Even though I think we were good in Europe, we were not considered as options. I didn't want the European developer community to be disbanded because of that. So we needed a structure to have people relate to, keep the flame alive.
Later on, Tristan offered some insights into his hopes for Mozilla and open source going forward.
I don't know what it's going to do, but I can tell you what I hope it's going to do. I hope it's going to demonstrate to Joe User that open source is actually able to deliver great quality products. So I think, or I hope, that we are showing the way, you know, leading the open source movement. I hope that people like OpenOffice.org or Wikipedia, which is in a sense an open source movement, you know, project, even though it's not producing software more. MediaWiki, which software is just a, you know, something that comes on top. I hope we can demonstrate the world that open source is able to deliver great products. I cross my fingers. We're not there yet. I think we need to achieve better market share for me to sleep better at night. But yes, this is going to be a major improvement. And I hope we're going to change or influence IT and force big players to play nicely. We've seen, for example, Microsoft opening up a bug database for Internet Explorer 7 the last week. And many people say it comes directly from our Bugzilla database. And I think it's good. I mean, more transparency, more quality assurance, better quality of products, better security, and all that. This is something we all need, right? And even if you decide to not use open source software, this is something you can ask to your proprietary vendor. I want quality, I want a feedback system, all that. So yes, we're also influencing, hopefully, the proprietary world.
Thank you for listening this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks with highlights from an interview with former Mozilla Corporation employee Raphael Ebron. In the meantime, please help us collect the history of Mozilla, both from the developer and user perspectives. Visit mozillamemory.org or email us at moz mosmem@gmail.com. That's mosmem@gmail.com. And become a part of history by contributing your story to the Mozilla Digital Memory Bank.